Hi, guys. We are so excited to tell you about our sponsor today. Maltanon Movies is being brought to you by Legion M, and it's the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. We love working with them. They are some of the nicest people, and they do lots of really cool things like fan meetups, events all over the country. They really make it fun for anybody who's a part of the Legion.
You can actually own a piece of a movie, and it doesn't cost a fortune to do it. Find out more at www.legionm.com. Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and we have two guests today. And they are kind of joined at the hip, so we couldn't get just one.
No.
They came as a set.
That's it. A matching pair.
A matching pair.
Salt and pepper.
That's right. And their names are Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Welcome, gentlemen.
Though I had someone ask me, and I'm not kidding, if you were called Lord Miller.
Oh, right.
Oh, that is by design.
So yes. As opposed to being like a band.
Well, our company is called Lord Miller without yes. any punctuation.
Why would there be?
We want to masquerade as like fancy. An English lord, mm-hmm. like Lord Lou Grade. Mm-hmm. Who mm-hmm. produced the Muppet Show and right, a bunch of other cool right. stuff. We have wanted to sort of have people imagine that it's a single entity.
It's working.
There you go. So we fooled one person.
You've done it, right?
Yay.
In America. Yes.
These are the fellows behind the Lego Movie, Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs. Most recently, they produced and you co-wrote Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Which I sent you an email with his review because I spent December in England. My husband's from England. Spent December in England with our family and our friends. So I'm just getting emails from him with what he wants to post review-wise. Mm-hmm. And in comes Spider-Verse. And I said, this is not a joke. You want to, okay. And I think the first line of it is something like, this is the greatest animated film I've ever seen. Like and the whole thing. And when I did post it, and people started responding and going, but Leonard, you know a lot about animation. Are you sure you want to? And he was going, yeah. No, I'm in for this. It blew my mind. And I said to my husband, we have to go see the movie because holy crap, that's a big deal from him. You know, it's a lot. So, you know, good job, you guys.
Thank you. I was scared to open it. I try not to read reviews these days. They freak me out.
No, it is freaky.
I only look for the one thing that might be interpreted as a negative. That's all I'm scanning for. And then if I don't find that and feel bad about myself, it's useless to me.
So you're Jewish. So you're Jewish is more, what you're saying to me.
It's more relief than joy.
You're just going like, where are the bogeys? Okay, cool. We got away with another one.
Now, I'm a huge fan of Clone High.
Oh, wow. Early days.
I love that show.
Oh, thank you.
And someone on the internet decided to let me know that there's a teeny like shot of it in Spider-Verse.
Yes.
There's a billboard for Clone College in Times Square. And the movie takes place in an alternate dimension, and things are different in that dimension. So all the movies and athletes are different. And one of the things is that Clone High was a huge, long-running show that then had a movie called Clone College.
Can that happen?
In that alternate dimension.
So far, it hasn't happened.
It would be awesome if it were to happen.
This is a long con. This whole movie thing is just trying to get Clone High back.
Well, hang on.
I'm very okay with that.
Obviously, you guys didn't get the memo. The memo about traveling straight down one path.
Yes.
Yes.
Your careers.
Yep.
And you know, maybe. With enough success, you could, you know, indulge yourself now and then with a little outside project. So you come out of animation, mm-hmm. and then you direct live action 21 Jump Street and its sequel, and you create TV shows, and some that you write, and some that you produce, and some that you jointly direct. And then you launch an incredible show called Last Man on Earth.
I'm glad you like that.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, you're doing it all wrong.
We're doing it wrong. Right.
You
should be like Jackson Pollock.
I don't mean to be, you know, like a Monday morning quarterback, but you're doing it all
wrong.
We're
doing it backwards. Oh, man. It's no question.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we've had this intervention.
Right?
You want to be like Jackson Pollock. You come up on this. You try a bunch of stuff. You're a great artist. You come up with this drip thing. It's awesome.
Yep.
And then you stick with that.
You ride that.
Ride that to the end.
Jasper Johns and the flags.
And there's flags.
Four flags.
Yeah, I know. I know. He diversified. He had the targets.
That's true. He did, eventually.
It's very confusing.
Mm.
Big mistake, Jasper.
So you guys met at Dartmouth.
It's true.
True. Which is a university.
A college.
No, a college. Yes.
Dartmouth College.
It is a small college, but there are those who love it, in the words of Daniel Webster.
And is it there that you started making animated shorts?
It's true, yeah. We met our freshman year, and Phil convinced me to take an animation class, and
said, no, Phil.
Yeah.
Not doing it.
And so we started making
government.
I was a government
what
major.
No.
So
you're a government.
That's
no,
right.
You have to
political,
do things.
How
international
does one
relations.
Government major?
You know, it's nice to know some things about other things, I guess.
Yeah. Otherwise, you don't have anything to make movies about.
That's right. And for a while, you were a computer science major.
Yes.
Solid, you know,
18 months.
Exactly. But we made a bunch of student films, and we helped each other on each other's
What
films.
Were they like?
Long.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was before the digital era, so, you know, we were shooting on 16 millimeter, and you didn't really know exactly what you were going to get till it all came through on the
we
other side.
We did pencil tests.
Yeah.
But they were all hand-drawn. We each hired assistants.
Do you draw well?
We draw.
We draw.
appealing. Yeah, I would say we have very specific taste, and we can at least communicate what we want in drawings.
I would say that Chris is as great as anyone I've seen at very quickly distilling something down to its essence. Mm-hmm. It makes him a great cartoonist. He was 4 years the cartoonist in the Dartmouth paper.
But we are lucky enough to work with really incredible artists who are some of the best artists in the world, and then remember that we are do little thumbnail drawings that communicate ideas better. But the artists that we get to work with now are, you know, of a whole different level of art.
They have more pencil miles.
We wanted to be a cartoonist.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was my first like a magazine cartoonist.
Oh yeah.
And that was the thing.
Yeah, it was a huge industry. I was just hanging out with this guy Peter Desev in New York, who does a lot of New Yorker stuff and magazine cartoons, and he's an amazing, amazing artist. But that whole industry really is
kind of dying.
Yeah,
if not dead, except for the New Yorker.
Exactly,
the New Yorker's going strong.
Long live.
Yes.
Alex Gregory, our buddy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a great New Yorker cartoonist.
So, what was I'm trying to get a sense of what was the tone or the attitude of these early cartoons that you did.
They were funny.
Yeah.
Chris's is really funny.
They were,
It's called...
Mine was called...
Sleazy Goes to France.
Yeah. It was a Sleazy the Wonder Squirrel, which was the character of my comic strip that I had in the daily paper.
I'm in.
Yeah. It was a chain-smoking squirrel that hosted a talk show. And there you go.
Has there been no anthology?
I know. Well, if you watched it, you would think that's enough.
No, they're charming.
The idea of that was that he had booked Godot to be his guest on his talk show, and he never showed up. And instead of waiting around for him, he went to go find him in France. It was like
it's
really
good to be front footed. Yeah. You know, don't be sitting on your heels.
Exactly.
So it can't possibly be true that Michael Eisner read about you and decided that you simply had to work for Disney.
This is somewhat of a legend. But it is a true legend. So far as we know, it hasn't been debunked.
Yes. There was an article about me in the Dartmouth alumni thing that they would give out to try and drum up money. Mm-hmm. And one of Michael's sons went to Dartmouth. We didn't know him. So he would get this. And supposedly, we were told later that he was flipping through it on the Disney jet. And I was like, who's this guy? And he passed it on to an executive who passed it on to an executive who passed it on to
Right? It went from Charles Hirshhorn to Dean Valentine to Barry Blumberg, who was our first boss.
Who called me up in my off-campus house while I was in college and said, hey, you want to come out to Disney for a meeting? In college, and I said, I can't because I have midterms.
I was going to say, yeah.
I said, but my friend Phil and I were thinking of moving out to Los Angeles in the summer when we graduate, so I'll save you a flight and we'll meet then. And then we went in on this meeting and we sent them our student films and they hired us to make Saturday morning cartoons. It was so long ago. That was when Saturday morning cartoons were a thing that were on the air.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the game of telephone, from one executive to the next, it went from being like, hey, check these guys out, to being like, Eisner says to hire the boys.
These are Eisner's guys direct from the top. So we got a really lucky break right at the top, and we were able to make the most of it. But it's sort of not a very replicatable
it's terrible
story.
To tell young people
all you gotta do learn is how wait to make for it someone from Disney to call you
you need to put cartoons into your college paper that then goes home with a fellow student and then he gives it to his dad.
It's a great system.
So, got very lucky.
Well, that I think luck is underrated, or under-recognized, if perhaps the word. Luck plays a big part in anyone's life and career.
Yes.
I've been the recipient of many lucky happenstances, and so I can vouch for it. But nothing went exactly according to plan.
No.
Because,
never does.
Because you made Clone High and they didn't like it.
Fools.
I would say one small segment of the population, which I guess would be a billion
people. in the nation of India,
got upset. They didn't actually see the show, but they heard that Gandhi was a character on the show. The show is called Clone High because it's about clones of famous historical figures that go to high school together and date and stuff. And Gandhi was one of the characters, and they thought that was inappropriate.
Untoward.
And so they had a hunger strike, and Viacom, realizing that there's a billion people, did not want to lose their broadcasting license in India, so they took the show off the air.
But that's because it didn't wind up at Disney. It wound up at MTV.
That's correct.
Yeah, it kind of bounced around.
Yeah.
And another lucky stroke, a thing that never happens. I mean, the show was, we made a pilot and the show died. And then a year later, someone just calls us up and says, "Hi, my name is MTV, and we want to put the show on the air." We're like, "Oh, okay." And we got to make this thing that was, a big part of our learning. After 2 years, we spent making a show that we loved.
Now, what did you? What kind of things did you learn? Practical stuff as well as big picture.
Well, that show. You know, we were working on it from soup to nuts. So we had been in a couple of writers' rooms on sitcoms, but this was the first time we would run one. So we ran the room. Meanwhile, we're recording actors, cutting the dialogue, and then we recut every animatic and did the storyboard revisions on every board.
So we learned how to use Final Cut to edit the show together. And we couldn't afford
Final Cut 2.
We couldn't afford storyboard revision, so we learned to do them ourselves because the MTV budgets they were paying us in MTV dollars redeemable at the MTV store. So we got a lot of great T-shirts.
You get to be in the TRL audience.
Yeah, exactly.
This comes back to what I was telling you last week. Ultimately, it's all about tote bags.
No,
exactly.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why we do this.
It's the end game for everything.
Yeah.
Tote bags.
Our house is so full of tote bags.
Littered with them.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And if you go to the grocery store, you forget a handful of them.
Don't you lie to me right now.
We got a Lego tote bag.
This is serious business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Serious business.
That's it.
No, it's mugs. One of my favorite things is opening up our cupboard of mugs and finding all the TV shows that are now defunct.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's been on, I feel like you've been on almost everything that's now gone. But it's things like, yes, Wayne Brady Show mug. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, that's a good collection.
It is. It is a solid one.
Yeah. That's a...
So how and at what point did you get involved with sitcoms?
Writing sitcoms, we started on a show called Zoe Duncan, Jack and Jane. That was the first one we did.
Yeah.
It was on a network that doesn't exist anymore, the WB.
Mm-hmm. Selma Blair.
Yeah.
Yep.
Michael Rosenbaum.
Yep. Yeah. And that was our first. It was our first writing job on something that we didn't make up ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned a lot about writing and etiquette and sort of being creative in a group, which was really useful.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was getting at. Was was a collaborative process where mm-hmm. you were not the bosses.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
which is the best, I have to say.
Yeah.
being like mid-level and having some influence on the show, but mm-hmm. then when you go home, you're not worrying about it.
Interesting.
It's a delight. Yeah. But we did learn, you know, that show was run by Pete Aronson and Mike Langworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all very young. They hired talented people who were inexperienced, mm-hmm. which is a good way to go. And they said, listen, here's how the room works. And they had certain rules. And the ones that stuck for us were you don't pitch problems, you pitch solutions. Mm-hmm. So when you read the script, it doesn't do anybody any good to sit there and go, oh, this page stinks.
Right.
Well, you know, how are we going to get out of this one? This whole story's broken. It's so depressing. If instead you're the person going, you know what might make this even better is this mm-hmm. thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they said, no stinky cheese face. Everybody can go, ugh.
If you don't like somebody's pitch, you can't go like, you can't make a face or, you know, a gross sound. It's like you need it to be a safe place where if a joke doesn't land, it's okay, right? Otherwise, you're not going to have a creative environment.
You move on.
Yes.
You move on. Everyone will just be silent and not laugh. That will be messaging.
It was really informative about how to have a positive creative environment, because in the end of the day, all of these things are massive collaborations.
Yeah.
No mm-hmm. TV show, no movie, no anything is made by yourself. It is a big, big undertaking. And mm-hmm. the sooner you realize that you're making it with artists and filmmakers, and they all have great ideas and opinions themselves, the sooner that you can open yourself up to making something even better.
Does it teach you humility?
Oh. Everything about this job teaches you humility. I tell people, if you want to become a director because you want to be in charge of everything and have everybody just do what you say, you're in the wrong business. You know, this is all about humility, and at no greater time than when you show something to an audience and you hear them. They laugh or they don't. They're into it or they want to go to the bathroom.
They're checking their phones. And they're not there.
They don't care. They're not being nice to you.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately that's who we serve.
Mm-hmm. So chronologically,
yes.
How did Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs come about? There was an existing book.
There was an existing book.
Yeah, our favorite book from growing up.
We coincidentally had a very similar childhoods on opposite corners of America.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Seattle area, and Phil grew up
And I grew up in Miami.
So, I mean...
That's about as far.
They're very different places. They're both port cities.
That's true. Mid-sized port cities.
Yeah.
But it just had similar... upbringings. We both loved that book, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. We went in on a meeting with at Sony Pictures Animation, who we just made Into the Spider-Verse with, and they had this property. Like, oh my gosh, that's my favorite kids book. It's my favorite kids book. That's crazy. We were meeting with them about a different project. We weren't very excited about that project, and so when they called us a day later to say, hey, what do you think? We said, yeah. You know, we had a lot more ideas about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And they said, oh, really? That'd be great. You want to come in and pitch it to us tomorrow? And then we said, how about the day after tomorrow? Because we didn't have any actual ideas.
So we just stayed up all night.
Yeah. And
coming up with the basic take, which was Armageddon, but funny on purpose.
Right.
and a disaster movie. Let's make it a disaster movie with food and take it, treat it like it's very high stakes. And
no pun.
No pun intended.
Pun very much intended.
All puns are intended, my friend. They're intended by God.
By faith. Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
But in any case, we came up with this the character set that basically was the final movie in that 24-hour period.
But the story was 100% different of the story that we originally wrote. And that we wrote, we were writing the movie and not directing it. We wrote a script that was really, really funny, but lacking in much in the way of emotion and had a number of significant story problems.
But other than that.
It was a delight. It was, but it tonally was a lot of fun, and it was like, oh, it felt like Airplane or something. It was just like zany and silly and funny, and but it just was not a good movie.
It wasn't sweet.
Although Airplane is a great movie, by the way.
Yes,
but,
it is.
It didn't have any heart to it whatsoever. And, you know, it had like, having working in sitcoms in 22-minute episodes, you can get away with just like a little bit of heart that's undercut. And you're like, that's enough. That's enough for 22 minutes. But to sustain your engagement for 90 minutes, you really need to care about these people, and you need to be rooting for something, and you need to like, you need, your heart needs to melt in a sincere way, and that just wasn't
happening.
Yeah. So
we got
fired,
canned,
and then
after about a year,
and then the directors of that film, took our script and took out all the jokes and just left the story problems. And so they got fired. And then the weirdest thing happened, which was they called us back and said, hey, would you want to direct this movie? Or they asked if we want to come back to the movie because they liked the tone of the original movie. And we said,
oh. Well, I don't really want to get fired again.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Is there a way we could do it without the firing?
And so then we were on the shortest contract ever for a director, which was like every
3 months they could fire us, I think.
On the contract. And so we just went to work. And because we knew that the script was not, had a lot of problems, we came in, sat down with this crew that we inherited, and just said, and they're like, what's your idea for how to fix the movie? And we said, well, what's your idea? What do you think? Which was the best, was mostly a stalling technique because we didn't have solutions. But it was the best best foot to get off of with the crew, and the best way to make the movie good because they've been working on it and they knew the problems better than anybody because they've been working on it for a year. And so everybody got to download and say what they thought, and we were able to come back and go like, okay, well, a lot of these ideas are contradictory, but this was a really cool thing, and this is great. And then we were like, okay, well, let's see if we can't figure out a path forward. And then over several years, we ended up making like the most collaborative type of way of making a movie. And that movie ended up starting with a credit, a film by a lot of people on it, because it really was a real group effort making that thing. And our job felt like we need to put it all through our own lens and like pick the ideas that we think are great, but really everybody contributed to that movie.
A lot of that directing process was about empowering the crew to and creating that safe space that we were talking about in that writer's room so that they had the freedom to fail. And we would sit in animation reviews and look at, you know, 65 people's work. At that time, that was a record for animation crew members. Spider-Verse was 180
at its peak. Because it was so
We beat our personal record. But in any case.
It's such a slow and laborious process to make a frame of that movie. Yeah. It required a preposterous number of animators.
Mm-hmm. But we would sit in these animation reviews and we said, I want to see the idea that you're scared to show anyone else. Mm-hmm. And you can rough it out, it's fine. And then when we started laughing at the stuff that seemed weird, too weird.
Yes.
And it encouraged the other artists. And so then there became this one-upsmanship.
Right. It'll be a thing where like, okay, here's the joke one. We're like, that's great, let's put it in. And then everyone got excited. And we wouldn't put them all in, obviously, because it would it would have been insane. But
it's no different than working with an actor. You want to engage the person's creativity and provide a goal, right, that's and keep people's eye on the story.
And I think that certainly as a as an actor, when you are, you feel a lot of trust with a director, and you know that you can fail on screen and they're not going to put it in the movie because they have enough taste to know when something is good or when it's bad, then they can feel open and try things that may not work, and then you can get things that are really spontaneous and interesting, and they're not just sort of like, I better do it exactly the way that I practiced it. So it ends up making everybody do their best work.
Well, that sounds...
See, again, you're doing it wrong, guys.
I know.
You're doing it all
it's
wrong.
Not efficient, I'll say.
Well, yeah, it is efficient because the end product is worthwhile.
Well, so I guess efficient is probably maybe...
It's inefficient if someone else is picking up the tab.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Right. I wish that we could all be geniuses on the first go, but it's it works for
us. I've always wondered why, and I've asked this question numerous times to people who've had experience with it. Why do you think it's so difficult to nail down a story for an animated feature? If you're writing a live-action feature, you write a script, you look it over, you show it to friends, then you show it to your boss, who's paying for it and all that, and either they like it, they don't, or they make notes, give you notes that you incorporate, and then you go and shoot it,
right?
And you've got a movie,
right? Simple,
and that can happen sometimes within a year.
It's true,
start to finish. But with animated features, there's a history of this.
Yes, they're very
going
iterative.
All the way back to Walt Disney's earliest work. He threw out 6 months of Pinocchio, threw it out. Started all over again. So that's how far back this goes.
There's a bunch of reasons, but to me, the boring and probably most true answer is that in an animated movie, you have to edit it first.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to shoot, let's say, 22 Jump Street, which we did in a year, you wind up with a four-hour assembly that's unwatchable, right? We exactly did not watch it. We would only watch one reel at a time because we wanted, you know, to stay, not to take our own lives. So then you cull it down and you have all this, you have like a million feet of footage to mess around with to try to like make something any good. And when you're animating, you have to do that ahead of time.
Right.
And so you wind up having to throw out half the movie like you would in the edit bay.
But I also think that, you know, it's a visual, an especially visual medium, and you also have a situation where you have to look at the movie in its animatic form, which is storyboards in a slideshow, right? And it's often
just to take another linger for a moment. Yes. Explain for the
so when you write the script, then the storyboard artist draws the storyboard, and then the next step is you have people from around the office record voices of, you know, just they're not professional actors, but it's fine, and then you put up the storyboards in sequence like it's like a slideshow of the movie timed to what the movie would be, and then you can watch that. Now it's in black and white. It's scratchy drawings. You're trying to interpret what it is, and then you hear these not the world's best actor voices. And if you watch that scene and it works, then you know that when real actual performances come in and real animation and beautiful color, and you see it all together, it's going to be amazing and dazzling. And it may, but normally you look at it and go, like, oh, this is not working at all. And so you have to
you're
go back.
You're not feeling
and
do it. In right. general.
Right? But there's a lot of situations where even if it was like you feel like it's not working, if you went through that process by the end, you'd be like, okay, that does work. But because it really, you get afraid that it's not good enough, you go back into it, and then make it work. And when it works in that area, then I think that's part of why I think a lot of animated films turn out so good. I think the percentage of animated movies that are well-reviewed is higher than those of live-action movies.
Significantly,
because people get a chance to go back in over and over and over again and tell, because they know it, they only get one shot at it. And
I've been thinking about this a lot in the last couple of days, that like the stories that that stick with us. Many of them have been told and retold for a really long time. Even the stories in our lives, we've retold the same story at the dinner table with at a family reunion for like mm-hmm. for right. years and years and years. So they get honed in that process. And the reason, like you know, the tale of Odysseus exactly is honed by like, you know, eons of
yeah.
retelling it. And so just to have a story that like just flops onto the page in a coffee shop by Phil having a good time by himself and expect that to be done and at the level of those other things just isn't reasonable. And so the grinding that happens in the edit suite and between with all these storytellers having to pitch out this storyboard or and, you yeah, know it hones it.
And I think and look at the way the Marvel movies are made now. They build in several months of reshoots so that yeah. they can, like, they yeah. shoot the movie, put it together, and they go, okay, now let's go back and do it again.
Yeah, right. And, or the Thing.
Right.
Right? Isn't that movie famously they had to stop because of a strike?
Mm-hmm.
And then John Carpenter's like editing it and goes, no, this is not good.
and so I think that the movies that can afford to do so, and I think then it ends up being quite nice for them. The movies turn out pretty well.
Now, I want to ask you about the flip side.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your experience directing your first live-action movie.
That was 21 Jump Street was our mm-hmm. first live-action movie. And we were...
By the third day, we had spent more time on a movie set than we have ever spent in our lives.
And on the fourth day, we were shooting an 11-person shootout in a penthouse with Johnny Depp.
Yeah, yeah,
So
in fantastic prosthetics.
Oh, yes, it was a fantastic prosthetic nose.
With the nose flown in from England.
It's true.
That got caught up in customs.
Oh, my. Yes.
Oh, gosh.
And we were definitely jumped into the deep end of the pool on that thing. But it was a similar situation where, you know, we had Jonah and Channing, two of the most talented people of their generation, and you could tell just from the screen test that these guys next to each other, that there was some sort of magical chemistry that they had. And we're like, it's going to be fine. We just got to get them in situations where they can have a dynamic and showcase their relationship and how odd it is that these two people like each other.
I remember the day that we sort of won over the crew, or where I felt like, okay, we can do this.
It was
we were blocking out that shootout.
Yes.
And it was the week before, and there's, you know, 100 crew members watching us because they got to know where to put the squibs mm-hmm. for the bullet
right,
hits.
Right. We have like a blueprint of the thing, and it was like, oh, this penny is Jonah, and this little Lego brick is Channing. And, okay.
And we had some cockamamie idea that they were going to hide in this corner behind this
like a potted plant,
and on the page it's fine. You just bump right over, and you get into the space. You're like, that's not going to work. There's no way they're going to be dead in 2 seconds. And the stunt coordinator is there. Nobody's buying it. And now everyone's just watching you, and the thing you've planned for months is falling apart, mm-hmm. right, in front of everyone. And I think it was you, Chris. Mm-hmm. We started... You know, with the help from the stunt coordinator and the ADs, and we just started rethinking it. Well, what if they went behind this couch? Oh, and if we did that, then the camera could be here, and wouldn't it be neat? And so we were being creative in a group again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really important day for our crew to see that that we were certainly willing to take a note, but also that we could think on our feet and mm-hmm. weren't going to wilt.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Johnny Watson pulled mm-hmm. us aside at the end of that day, as we were scared to death, and was like, this was a very important day for you guys.
Hmm.
And I'll never forget it.
I do know why you thought they could hide behind a tree, though. You do animation.
I know. In Clone High, that would have worked great.
Right? In any animated, they hide behind a tree. They disappear. Everyone knows that's how that works. You hide behind a tree.
Cartoon logic.
Disappear.
Yeah,
that argument didn't hold in front of these crips.
How dare they?
More's the pity. Now, did you seek and did you get any great piece of advice
From work with Ice Cube. That's the best.
Well, yeah, you can't fail with him.
Ever.
We did. We sought a lot of advice. We were very. Mm-hmm. We felt very unprepared because we were.
We visited. I mean, we'd been, you know, on a bunch of sitcom sets for many, many years, but it's a different type of scale and a whole different thing. So we would like hang out on the sets of other friends' movies and things, just to see how they do it. One crazy thing about directing is that you never really get to watch how anyone else does it unless you, like, really go and seek it out. It's a very isolating job, you know. Mm-hmm. As an actor, you get to see a different directors and the way they do things differently. And it's sometimes fun to ask actors, like, how is this director working?
Oh,
how does
yeah.
this person do? And get to know, like, oh, is that how they run the set? And seeing different ways, you're like, oh, I want to do that.
Well, and everyone's different.
Everyone is different.
Right? Like, I remember we watched Stoller work, which was, mm-hmm. like, Nick Stoller was really valuable for us. He works in a similar way.
And he would just shout out lines to actors.
Maybe some bad habits.
Yeah. try this.
What I remember about Nick is he was, like less concerned with, like, oh, I'm going to finally craft this line that I wrote, right? And I'm going to make sure you say it just the way I hear it in my head. Instead, he was like, that's not working. Try this. And it was so spontaneous, and it was so not precious for a writer-director.
Mm.
And so that was really valuable. Mm-hmm. But he works so differently than, like, Greta Gerwig, who literally, she puts it on the page, and you say it exactly how she wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes out, and I'm like, I don't know. It sounds, and it feels spontaneous.
Uh-huh. Mm. I wish I was that great on the first try.
So what would you say is the biggest lesson you took away from that
experience? Oh, man.
Always work with Ice Cube. I've made that clear.
Always work with Ice Cube. I think the lesson we keep having to learn, that every writer keeps having to learn, is that harmony on screen is actually more spectacular than argument. Watching Jonah and Channing, those two characters, fall in love and be together
mm-hmm.
and love each other. You know, Channing's idea was, I'm going to play every scene like I'm trying to get Jonah to fall in love with me. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be just like this, what's his romantic comedy that he did?
Magic Mike.
Negative.
No. I'm joking.
Yes, but I love it. I love it. No, The Vow.
Oh, yeah.
Because that year, The Vow came out, Jump Street came out, and Magic Mike came out. How about that? He has a crazy year. And he's like, I'm going to do it just like The Vow.
Because
I'm trying to get her to fall for me again. I'm going to try to get Jonah to fall in love with me. And that was so much more interesting than, like, two guys fighting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was just, it's because I think we know what fighting is like. And mm-hmm. watching people get along is so unique.
Mm-hmm. Well, that gives audiences a wish fulfillment.
It's true.
Yeah,
and you factor. Can throw stuff at them and they have conflict with the environment around them. And they, you know, obviously will have some conflict there, but everything doesn't have to be so harsh all the time.
No, I mean, because you sit there and you say, I wish I had a friend like that.
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't it be great to have a, you know, that kind of relationship?
And what would it take for me to have that with the people in my life? At some level, we are looking to these stories
to teach us something.
For some kind of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's why we go to church. That's why, like, when we were cave people, they would take you into the cave and show you the drawings and stuff. We're hoping for some kind of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And so watching people model, right, a friendship is messed up as theirs is.
It also, though, it stays. So something like Lego Movie, which I actually don't know how many times I've seen it at this point. Because
me either.
It's a lot. Whatever it is, it's many. And that's another one, same kind of thing, where it's joyous. And that is something that I want to watch over and over and over again. You know, sometimes you watch a movie and it ends and you say, that was really interesting and I never need to see it again. And that's nothing against it.
Right, it's important.
You know, especially with some of the heavy dramas or things like that. Yeah. You go, that was really great and now I never want to watch it again. But the stuff that makes you happy and the stuff that brings you up. Lego Movie became the movie that my husband and I put on before we went to sleep every night.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
I like it.
It was one that we knew every single word for, so we could listen without listening.
Right, it's like a lullaby.
And it was. It
a very fast-paced lullaby.
There's Brahms.
Right. Oh, I love
and
Brahms.
There's you guys.
That's right.
I love
but,
it.
But it amazed me because every time I watched it, I found something else.
Like well, it's every very, single time. There's also, a lot of detail in there.
Thank you very much, because I went from being you look like that girl.
Oh, right, Wild
you
Style.
You look like the, what is it, her name? Eternal Sunshine. It went from that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then it went to the, what's the Edgar Wright movie? That?
Ramona Flowers.
Thank you. Then yeah. It went to Ramona Flowers. But then it went to Wild Style. And I was like, yes, I'll be a Lego.
Yeah. Oh, I like
I will
that.
Take that all yeah. day. But every time I watch it.
You'll be interested in Lego Movie 2, I think.
You are, you yes. are correct, sir. You are
well,
very correct.
Yeah. No spoilers, but there are some hair situation happening
okay.
in that motion picture.
There's a tease.
There's a tease.
There's a teaser for you. But, so all right. So how did you guys come up with the idea of doing a Lego movie and then executing it? I mean, thinking of the idea is genius right there, but executing it in the...
That was
well,
it, yeah.
the Hagerman brothers mm-hmm. had written a treatment for a Lego movie. We can't take credit for that. And our producer Dan Lin was trying to put something together. And then we met them. They were at Sony Animation while we were making Cloudy, and they mentioned this thing. And we both said, like, that's a pretty great mm-hmm. idea. And they had the notion of, you know, there would be a meta universe of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, that's really clever. And we got really inspired by the way people use Lego as a filmmaking tool, right? You can make a whole little set, and now with your iPhone, you can literally make a stop motion movie in mm-hmm. your like garage. And at the time, you know, people were, you know, shooting them on film, and you can, they were just really, there were so many of them, and they were so clever with how they used the different Lego bricks to solve, you know, what does a flower pot look like and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So we were really inspired by that. And we thought, oh, what a neat thing. You could use this like big corporate enterprise. It's Warner Brothers and Lego, and they're going to work together to make a big summer movie. And what if we use that to talk about the democratization of storytelling? And that was the thing that got us up in the morning. How do we make it look like a kid with infinite funding made the movie by hand themselves? You know, we like to feel the fingerprints on the mm-hmm. on the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really neat way to do mm-hmm. that.
And part of it was inspired by my sister asked me to help my nephew make a Pinewood Derby car for the little for like a racing thing. And I remember doing it with my dad, and we were like, we had made the most aerodynamic one possible. And she was like, just don't let him if you drill or saw anything or you use the hot glue gun and just let him do what he wants to do. And he was like, okay, I see it as about 20 inches tall with feathers and a helicopter blade and then a rocket front and then googly eyes and then a bunch of pipe cleaners that go in every direction. And I was like, this is going to be a very slow... very, you're not going to win the race. And he's like, I don't care about that. And I was like, why do I care about, if he wants to make the craziest looking Pinewood Derby car ever, then I'm just going to help him do it. But for a minute, I was like, why am I being a stick in the mud about this? And he made this thing that was absurd and amazing. He was so proud of it. And it was like glitter and feathers. And it was the silliest looking thing you've ever seen.
It failed the wind tunnel test.
But does he want to hang out with me? Because
but exactly.
It sounds like we'd get on real.
Oh, he's the best. I think you would.
And we named the character, the Finn. Kid in the movie after him, Finn.
And so we're like, oh, you know, and you know, there's a point in your life when you are slow down your love of creativity and just expressing joy, and you start getting really practical and filled with shame and all this stuff. And we wanted to figure out a way to make a movie that would get people to leave the theater feeling more creative than when they went in.
Well, I think it succeeds in that way in a big way.
Now, the key question that keeps burning in my brain is, how'd you do it?
No how pressure or anything, but how?
I watch it and I say, how'd they do that?
It was it took a while.
Yeah.
Do you remember we went to Bottega Louie and had like a big long lunch and just tried to plot out like, all right, what is it about creativity? Like if you had to teach it, like how would you break it down? And then we even talked to a psychologist, right? Marty Seligman, and asked him what he thought. So we had this underpinning of these ideas, which were totally useless when you're actually making the movie, but they were underneath it. Mm-hmm. And then we just started trying to build out the character set and by block. You know, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time.
We were very opinionated.
Sorry, we
about
can't
it.
Start.
Yeah,
an elephant for just one sandwich. I just think of old jokes. It's a trick in my brain.
We had very strong opinions about what the look of the movie should be. We felt like it needs to feel like a stop motion brick film that someone made in their basement.
Mm-hmm.
We know that like it needs to have that tactile quality, and we want everything to be made of Lego, even the water, even the effects. Everything needs to be made of Lego, and every step of the way, people are like, that's not going to work because of this reason, that's not going to work because of that reason. And we'd be like, look at this crazy little movie that somebody made, and look at what they did for the little wave effects here. And isn't that neat? And couldn't we do that on a much larger scale and have it be incredible? Like, see Hokusai's wave, but made out of bricks.
Take your imagination elsewhere, sir.
Exactly. No. And our enthusiasm for it and our belief that it would work, even though we didn't know that it actually would work, what got everybody else to go like, oh, yeah, you know what else you could do? And it's the same thing that's happened again and again and again, is that when people are on a common goal and they get excited, then they bring a lot of cool ideas. And when you say yes to those ideas, or some of them anyway, then everyone feels empowered and everyone feels like they're in it together, and it's not just some sort of decree that some people are executing. And that's been the lesson again and again and again for us, is like, listen to people, and we're in a creative medium, and a lot of creativity can come from anywhere, and a good idea, and best idea wins.
It's not easy.
Oh,
we made that movie 20 times terribly before we made it one time good.
How so?
You make, you know, every sequence you're looking at it in the edit suite, and it's just a bunch of yucky drawings.
The first version of that movie, Emmett was saving his mom, who was the world's most powerful master builder.
Huh.
And there, it just, as a storyline, it was weird. There's not the sort of elemental connection of like a child saving their mother. You know, a parent saving a child, or a friend saving a friend, or a person saving a loved one is one thing, but a child saving a parent was a weird... It was something that didn't...
It was hard to get people to connect to it.
And we
always wondered if it's because at the cellular level, you know it's supposed to go the other way.
Right. Imagine like a young person like carrying their mom out of a burning building. You're like, that's a weird image that it doesn't connect on an elemental level.
So we struggled at that, you know, just to make it play. Right. And there was all this zany stuff, and it didn't all connect. Right. And so we just, you know, you really do it shot by shot. And it's a grind. And there's a lot of blood all over the walls of, like, great ideas that didn't make it. And all this effort and beautiful drawings and beautiful performances and beautiful animation that just doesn't make the cut because you look at it and go, I don't know, I don't feel anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
And that's the problem of these things, is that it's not about putting my idea in front of you. It's about getting you to bring your idea to the screen. And we're just trying to create a kind of the magic golden conditions for that to take place, for you to tell the story of what those people are on screen are doing. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of alchemy that you can try to guess at, but it either happens or it doesn't. And when it doesn't, you have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, and anytime that we've been really precious about things, it doesn't work. And that's part of why it took 5 years to make the sequel to that movie, is because you know,
we had to mess it up a few times.
I wish we knew right away from the beginning again, then we outputted the most perfect script. But you look at it and go like, this is not, I'm not engaged as much as I need to be. And so we just are willing to keep working and changing it until it is engaging and it is exciting.
And you've just wrapped on
Lego 2, yes.
Which is actually called
Lego, the Lego Movie 2, the second part, it's called. yes, we just
were, absolutely necessary, yes. Subtitle.
We were just doing our last full day of the sound mix yesterday.
It was
crazy. Wow.
Well, congratulations for that.
Thank you. But, yeah, it was a late night.
Yeah, right. I do hope you know with the first one that all of that effort is seen. That the craziness that you put in, it's why the movie is so good. And it's why every time you, and I have friends where we'll discuss it at times, just going, I keep finding more stuff. And I don't know how. I don't know how I keep finding, or I'll hear something and it's different. And of course, the voice actors are great.
They are.
And getting Jonah, you know, and Channing to do it is so funny. But to think about how much, I'm always fascinated by pop culture, and to think about how much of it, how much of that film is what I hear people say, you know?
That's cool.
Black or very dark gray. Like, there's some things, darkness, no parents. Like, I hear this stuff all the time, and it makes me laugh. And it is.
We've sought treatment.
Of course.
It's true. It's awkward.
To no avail.
It's awkward.
To no avail.
It must be hard.
Yeah, right.
I feel like people, we believe that people recognize or appreciate when they go to a movie that all the effort is put in. Really, you see a movie and you're like, wow, that must have been really hard to do. You know, part of when you see The Revenant and you hear the stories about how difficult it was.
He slept inside a bear, guys.
You feel like you've earned my money for the ticket, right?
Yeah.
If someone's like, I just threw it together. You're like, well, is this a theatrical experience for me? So I feel like when you see it and you say, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much energy they put into this. And that was sort of...
It feels crafted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
And
it's like being in a cathedral. It's like you know that it took a lot of people to make this thing and they made every detail carefully.
Right. And on Spider-Verse, that was like even more so, just the amount of energy.
Well, Spider-Verse.
I was exhausted on your behalf. That's one of those
Spider-Verse
movies.
Spider-Verse is just overwhelming. I think that's the first word that comes to my mind. Overwhelming, because there's so much going on visually and conceptually, and it's just a remarkable piece of work.
Oh, I'm glad you guys liked it.
It comes out of a seemingly simple idea. Let's make an animated film that looks like a comic book come to life.
Right.
Go do that.
Yeah, right.
Piece of cake.
Yes. We're going to need 15 Spider-Mans.
Yeah, exactly. So 4 years and 800 people later, this is what happens.
But I find it both interesting and somewhat ironic that, if I understand correctly, at the end of the day, you decided the only way this would really work is with some hand-drawn animation. With having artists who still know how to use old-fashioned implements to do an overlay or something, I don't know what you'd call it, on all this high-tech computer imagery. Am I right?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
It was a technique that took about a year and a half to develop, about how do we get this thing to look and feel like you're immersed in a world, like in a living painting or a comic book, and ultimately ended up being a combination of CG and hand-drawn techniques and new software and shading and rendering and texturing that made light sources as halftone Benday dots, shadows as hatching and shading and painterly textures on everybody. And then on top of that, at various different levels, an artist drawing line work by hand and also, you know, text boxes and all that other stuff. It was it was a lot of trial and error to figure out how to make it feel seamless and integrated and not just sort of like, oh, I'm doodling some jazz on top of a CG thing. It had to feel like it came out of an artist's hand. And it turned out that the best way to do that was for it to actually come out of an artist's hand.
But that's how, you know, sequential art and graphic novels speak to us. It's not machined. It's not color forms. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, each one is different. There's a different artist. Those things are a crazy collaboration because some guy's doing the pencils and someone else is doing the inks and another guy's doing mm-hmm. the color. And they mm-hmm. all have to communicate or it'll look like a mess. And so we wanted it to feel like you were holding one of those things up to your face and it was picking up your whole field of view and you were under the covers with a flashlight. And I always felt as a kid that an artist was communicating directly to me.
Yeah.
I could see, and I was looking for the, you know, the scratch lines of the pen tool on the paper
yeah.
and the splatter of the ink. You know, that's the personality. That's the idea that there's a guy there trying to tell you something.
Yeah.
And we wanted that feeling.
Right.
How do you decide? Obviously, you're great multitaskers. How do you decide which films you want to direct and which films you're content to either write or produce where you're still, you know, hands-on, but someone else is doing the heavy lifting?
That's a good and tricky question. I mean, the situation here was that we had these two movies happening at the same time, and mm-hmm. so it just wasn't practical. And the undertaking of Spider-Verse is so massive. It needed all the help we could get. And we started with Bob Persichetti, then we brought in Peter Ramsey, and then we brought in Rodney first on script, and then we were like, you wanna join the club? It's a party over here. This movie is so massive. You know, someone needs to be overseeing the animation, and someone needs to be over here recording the actors, and someone needs to be in the edit room, and someone needs to be here, and we're all gonna just run back and forth with each other and communicate, and that was the situation for that movie. It was
this project needed everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was really clear. You know, we have a bunch of producing partners too, and mm-hmm. they were unbelievably valuable, mm-hmm. and it just was a massive undertaking.
Right.
And you can see it on screen.
It looks like a massive undertaking. Right.
You know? And it's like a story that's so complex but needs to be told simply and cleanly for people. The idea was that if you've never seen a superhero movie in your life and you don't know anything about comic books at all, you're watching a movie about a kid and his parents and a new set of friends and trying to find his place in the world and how does a person be their best self. And you had to slowly lead the audience to this idea of multiple dimensions and various versions of characters and different animation styles, and it could have been very jumbled and insane, but at the end of the day, the same way it was on our other movies, when we had everybody knew what the goal was, everyone knew what the tone was. If it had five different voices of what Phil wanted, I wanted, Bob, Peter, Rodney, any of the other people involved were like, oh, I want it to be a gritty coal miner drama. I want it to be a silly wackadoo thing. We all knew this was Miles Morales' story. This is, we want to know what the tone is like. It's funny, it's action, it's heart, first and foremost. And so we all wanted the same thing, and we all wanted the same look. We all wanted to push boundaries in every step of the way. And so it ended up being not a committee, but a collaboration.
Mm-hmm. It makes me tear up because I think about when I watch the movie, I think about all of these individual voices and artists who come from, who all have similar stories, like I was the one weird kid on my block, mm-hmm. and I was the one mm-hmm. weird kid in my town, and then I went, I went to a comic book shop, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's other people that are mm-hmm. into the same stuff as me, and I feel seen. And then you bring 800 of those people together, and they go and make a collective work of art. And it's so beautiful. And I see each person who did that shot. I see like Bob's animation. I see Peter's camera. I see Rodney's humanity and writing. And I get so moved because it also reflects the story that we told.
Absolutely.
These people who have an affinity, it's not even their fault. They get bit by something.
Right.
You know, that's one of the reasons we made Miles an artist. You get bit. And I've told people this before. It's like, young people, I'm like, I'm really sorry, but you're an artist. And you're never going to be able to shake it. And you might try to be an accountant, and you're going to wake up at 40, and you're going to throw it all away and go and be a painter on the sidewalk.
You might try to study government.
You might as well admit it to yourself and get going, because it's not an easy job, and it is super necessary. And so I get, you know, verklempt when I think about that, and I think about Miles and how he found other people like him who are talented like him that can help him lead the way, and the job they have to do, save the universe, by the way, they have to do it collectively. And if I can be super corny for a moment, I do think that that is one of the dimensions of the artwork. Is that of making art is that you can be on the vanguard of big, important ideas, because you have the freedom to do that. You're not a politician. You're not there. You're not about the art of the possible. You're about imagining what could be. And that makes me really proud. You know, this movie does some of that. We've got a really diverse cast. We've got, a Spider-Man who's Puerto Rican and African-American. Yeah. I mean, that is like a really special thing to us.
And it has been a very special thing to a lot of people. That's, hype is a terrible thing because it ruins so much. And so that's always really hard. But it was a very interesting week when everyone I knew started seeing the film, because all of a sudden I was getting just constant, oh my God, it's me. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Look, I can see myself and you can see yourself. And absolutely, when you're a weirdo, which I think most of us, cinephile or, you know, animation nerds, like, yeah, super weirdo, definitely did not fit in, definitely struggled. Like, when you see something like that and you go, oh my God, it's me. And that's why we all need that. We all need those moments. But it has been really exciting. I didn't make your movie, and I'm excited about how people are reacting and how it's, you know, how happy it's making them.
It's been,
and that's a lot.
It's been amazing. And, and seeing people, that's the part that makes me get the most choked up, is when people say, like, I feel seen. Or,
oh, yeah. It's
Or my kid turned to me and said, he looks like me.
I know, I know. And it's... Yeah. That's how I felt with Wild Style. it is really funny that it can seem simple to one person, and then it can mean the world to someone else. And anytime you do that, even part of why I love Clone High is I'm like, weirdos made that, because only someone as weird as me would be like, this is the genius idea, guys. Let's see what happens.
It's opera about raisins.
But that's, and it was brilliant. No, it's that kind of a thing. It's exciting and it's fun, and that's a big deal. And as you say, you do have to focus, as complex as the visuals are. The story has to just be simple enough to make everybody universally enjoy. And I love, I'm a creep in a movie theater because I like to watch people.
Sure. Oh,
interesting.
Because I like
with
to see.
With a camera, with 100%, an infrared camera.
Oh, no. They're
too,
naked. It's weird. Yeah. It's fine. No, I'm also the one that will accost you coming out of a theater and be like, what'd you think? Just because I like to know. I like to know how you reacted. And so the fact that I was sitting there and there were families, of course, because Spider-Man. So even if they know nothing, they know Spider-Man, it's Christmas time, take kid.
Right.
And I punched my microphone. But at the same time, you've got, like, there's me and my husband. And then there's a whole bunch of teenage kids. Like, it was such a range.
My friend Lisa told me this morning that she took everyone in her family from from kids up to someone was in her late 70s. And they went, 12 of them, they took up a whole row. Huh. And she's like, I couldn't believe it. Felt like they all liked it. They all loved it.
I got an email.
I can't believe that.
Yeah. I got an email from a female friend who said, when I wrote in my review that even my wife liked
which is honestly the biggest compliment we can give you.
She has no interest in comic book movies or superhero movies, but she really liked this film. That convinced her.
Oh, amazing. Thank you very much.
I got you one customer.
I love it.
I'll take that version
I got on the phone from my mother is I said, so you liked it? Because she doesn't like Marvel. She doesn't like any of that. She's not a superhero person. Doesn't really like sci-fi. Not her thing. And she goes, you know me, I think these are terrible. And I really loved it. And I was like, I really hope that becomes a pull quote somewhere. You know me, I think these things are terrible. But yeah, I mean, it says a lot.
Yeah.
I always tell people it fascinates me when my parents and I see a movie together, and now husband, because there's four very different opinions.
Right.
And so if we all come out of something and we liked it, that says something, whatever it is.
Right. Well, I think there's like a really universal core about that. And it's really about love and family and feeling like you're not alone and all these really, really simple, universal, elemental themes that I think when we're thinking about a movie from the beginning,
we
like that's the bedrock of what we try to build things off of. And that was what was great about Spider-Man when Stan Lee and Steve Ditko created him in the early 60s.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, this is the superhero that could be you. It was a regular kid. It wasn't a billionaire. It wasn't an alien. It wasn't a god. It was like a nerdy teenager in like Queens in a lower middle class family. And for a lot of people, it was like, that could be me. And this movie was sort of taking that idea and expanding on it and saying like in 2018-19 what is that now, and so it, the idea that we want to be as inclusive as possible and say like anybody watching this movie, young, old, whatever walk of life you came from, you watch this thing like I could be a hero and I people are counting on me, and so that was the goal, and it's really You hope that message gets out there, and to see people to really really respond to it in a really emotional level, so much so that there's like this movement of people making their own spider sonas where they make versions of themselves as their what their Spider-Man would look
spider
like
sona.
And there's thousands of them and seeing that has been really like a very joyful experience.
I feel really lucky because you make the movie and you go, I'm proud of this and I'm proud of everything we did and I don't know if anyone's going to get it. Mm-hmm. And the rest is a bonus. You have to be satisfied with having made the work.
Well, you got a lot of gravy on this one, though.
We did. We got a lot of, I mean, we're just like moved that people got what we put
in
it.
Your Stan tribute in it.
Oh, lovely. That was just lovely.
I'm an easy crier anyway, but you know, the first and then the last, I was just definitely sitting there going,
yeah. I mean, he meant a lot to us, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about Stanley for those who aren't.
Yeah.
Stanley.
And we were lucky enough to have met him many years ago. We accosted him at a Comic-Con, you know, back in our very early days. And then we got to meet him again a few years later in a professional situation. And he was just such a positive guy, and his whole attitude and his attitude on this movie was like, you're doing great, keep going. That was his whole
vibe. He was encouraging.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's neat.
And the movie is encouraging.
Well, that's neat. But that's everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of quick wrap-up questions.
Yes, here we go.
All right. First, is it true? Is it a rumor or is it true you're doing an Etch-a-Sketch movie?
Oh, my gosh.
False.
That is false.
Okay.
However,
can it be true?
I can tell you that we were pitched in Etch-a-Sketch
many, many years ago.
So there is. It's not.
That's so crazy.
Completely unfounded. That's the first I've heard of it.
Then they erased it.
Then they erased it.
And then we shook it up and then moved on.
Too bad.
I like this speed round though.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Do you feel any ownership of the Solo movie?
Oh, my. Well, I'll say that when we were making that movie, we were making a movie about a maverick, about a person who and a person who breaks the rules. And that's what we try to do with every movie. And that's what we were doing with Spider-Verse, was trying to make a movie that takes something that you're familiar with and turns it on its head. And so I feel like that everything that we've done on every movie has been that, and that movie was no different.
What you're supposed to say is, we did all the stuff you liked.
Oh, I see.
I can only say that we're really proud of what everybody did, and we had an awesome crew on that, and
an amazing cast, you know, and
we're proud of the work that we did, and I'm happy for everybody.
Good. Okay. Last question. Wile E. Coyote, happening or not?
I mean,
is that another?
Is there a rumor about that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me. Let's break news just for us.
We haven't heard about it, but
so it's another rumored project.
I like Wile E. Coyote.
Well, I read about it, where I get all my reliable information. Yes. The internet,
of course. Yes. Of course.
Nothing. Everything on the source. Internet is true. Yes. That's for sure. That's what
It'd
I know.
Be cool though if like Russian bots were trying to get that out there to divide the nation.
If by Russian bots you mean my dad sitting right. at home being like, "What a Wile E. Coyote!"
I hear Lord Miller making a Wile E.
Coyote. It sounds like a good idea. I can confirm that we have nothing like that on the.
Are you
on
making
the docket.
A Wile E. Coyote Etch-a-Sketch film?
No. That's, now we're talking.
Now we're talking mashups.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we do like a challenge.
That one would be a challenge.
Well, you've met. You've met so many challenges, and you've exceeded anyone's dreams of what these films could be and should be like. And you've given us just a tremendous gift of entertainment and wonder, and just sheer pleasure. Well, so for that, we say thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We're returning the favor. You know, we're the generation that grew up watching you on TV.
Did you have to fast forward through him to watch Star Wars is the real question.
No,
I had to fast forward through whatever else they were talking about on Entertainment Tonight just to get to this man.
That's fair.
Who was in the pre-internet era the only way that if you're in Miami, this is the only way you can hear somebody talk about movies is watching television. And we grew up reading your book and reading, you know, watching you every night. And I just appreciate you, and it's a thrill for us to sit here and talk about movies with you. It's like my dream come true.
Well, come back and do it again sometime.
We would love to.
We'd love to have you anytime. That door that is literally open is figuratively open as well.
Oh, God.
Our door is always open to you guys.
You'd be a great set designer.
Now, if people want to follow you fellows, how do they do that?
Yes.
We are on both Twitter
and
the gram.
Occasionally, mm-hmm. occasionally Instagram. We're the same on both. Mine is just the worst because it turns out Chris Miller, common name. So it's CHRIZMILLR. That's Miller with no E. honestly.
And I'm at Philip Lord. That's one L in Philip the proper way.
And that's it. Thank you guys so much.
Well, thank you. And where do they find us, honey?
You are Leonard with a Z. L-Z-E. No. He is at Leonard Maltin. Leonard Maltin. You are at Leonard Maltin. I am at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. And you can go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff. And we just made our announcement about Maltin Fest.
Ooh. Oh, what is Maltin Fest?
Maybe, well, maybe Lord and Miller we're want hatching, to be part of our very first film festival.
We're hatching our own film festival.
Oh,
come
fun.
On.
To take place right here in Hollywood, where it ought to take place.
Where all film festivals ought to be.
That's right. Except the ones that aren't.
Right.
And,
except for Toronto.
And it's
and
so
Sundance.
May 10th through 12th. Mark it in ink on your calendar, if you still have ink.
May 10th or 12th.
And we will reveal more is to be revealed.
That's exciting.
Doing great. Yep. Doing great, Dan.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
I'm pumped up.
I'm intrigued.
All right. Thanks so much for being here. Thank you, folks, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Today's episode of Maltin on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.